changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more.
I've shared with you that I have just fallen addicted lately to celebrity biographies. It all started when I was listening to a podcast and they were interviewing Ron and Clint Howard. Ron Howard, of course, was Opie on the Andy Griffith Show. He was on Happy Days. He is a world-renowned director. And I decided that I listened to the book, which was about 13 hours. And then I decided, for some reason, I'm going to listen to another one. And then I picked up another book. I don't remember which one it was. But just over the last couple of weeks, I've listened to biographies or autobiographies that I remember of Bryan Cranston. I didn't finish that one yet. Lucille Ball, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, Ron Howard, and now I'm listening to Will Smith's. Will Smith's is interesting. He's narrated it. Not only did he narrate it, but he also included some. There are audio clips when he refers to a song, etc. The song is actually there. He plays it. So I'm noticing something as I'm listening to these very, very famous people. So today I wanted to just share some commonalities and some interesting things that I discovered between the lives of Ron Howard, Lucille Ball, and Will Smith. And one of the things that I've noticed is that there's an old saying that people who are on top didn't just land there. And all of them work really hard at their craft. Will Smith, of course, still does. And by that, I mean that they just have this relentless work ethic that they are going to do whatever it takes to become good at what it is they want to become good at. One of the things that I never knew but makes perfect sense, for those of you who are old enough to remember, Buster Keaton, the man with the deadpan, isn't that what they called him? One of the greatest comics of the silent movie era, and he continued even up into doing talkies. But he actually trained Lucy. When Lucy would do gags and things like that in movies and on television, she would also often call her old friend Buster Keaton, and before she would do it, the two of them would work it out together, and she would practice over and over and over again. It's difficult to look spontaneous when you're on stage or when you're in the movies or when you're on a TV show. And yet that's sort of the essence of trying to sell a gag to somebody, is it's got to look basically unplanned. And so she would practice over and over and over again. And Ron Howard also had a very relentless work ethic, I think somewhat by, not by his, I wouldn't say out of his control, but I'm saying that he had to be on, he had to practice, be on set from the time he was 4 years old, 3 years old, and then he would have to go to school because they had a tutor there who would tutor him. And so he would tutor, then he would learn his lines, and then he would get up and do it all over again. Will Smith's story is super interesting. You may know that his father owned a business, and when Will Smith was 9 years old, his father needed a new brick wall done behind his store. So his father went outside and tore the store down, but the brick wall, the old one that was there, and carried it away and told Will and his brother Harry, I think it's Harry, yes, that they needed to build the new wall there, and they had to figure it out. This was before there was any internet. They had to figure out how to make this is a true story. I had to figure out how to make concrete, had to figure out how to lay a brick. And Will Smith's father was trying to get across the point that if you lay one brick really, really well, you will ultimately build an entire wall. But it starts with laying one brick, and then it takes moving on to the next brick. And so he and his brother worked on this 6 days a week for a year and a half before they built the wall. And then his father's only comment was, "Now don't tell me there's anything you can't do. Don't ever tell me there's anything you can't do." Will Smith talks about how two grown men could have put this wall up in a day and a half or 2 days at the most, but it took them a year and a half because they literally had to figure it out. You're talking about a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old, and yet nonetheless they did it. And he said that this instilled in him this just insane work ethic. One of the things that I had forgotten, didn't realize, wasn't paying attention to is that Will Smith really grew out of rapping and was in the right place at the right time in a lot of ways. And he met Jazzy Jeff, who was the biggest DJ at the time. He makes a point in his book that DJs were the big stars of the day, not rappers initially. And then rapping sort of moved into its own celebrated arena. But that's how he got started. And he said that he and Jazzy Jeff would practice 8 to 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's just all they did. They practiced, they practiced, they practiced. And again, what they did was it looked very almost spontaneous when they were on stage and when they were performing, but it was because of this relentless work ethic. I guess you can hear there's an ambulance going by. So often we want to become good at something and we don't realize that we have to spend lots and lots and lots and lots of hours being bad at something to become good at something. Many of you know I'm a Kiss fan, grew up a huge Kiss fan. And one of the things I found interesting was they wear 7-inch heels to make themselves look bigger when they're on stage. They always have. And the idea is almost to look like superheroes. They had to train how to walk up and down their stage set. And so they would spend sometimes 6 hours a day just with a metronome like this to simulate their songs going up and down the stairs in the exact same time. There is this commonality of truly putting forth, and it's not a massive amount of effort so much as it's a daily amount of effort. I think that's really the key. I know people, I'm sure you know people, I've known people, I've been this person where they go to the gym and they work out really, really hard for a few days and then they don't go back for a while. And it's much better to go in and do a little bit on a daily basis than it is to do a massive amount once in a while. And that's one of the things that I'm seeing is a commonality, is this hard work on a daily basis. One of the stories I found most interesting in all of the biographies that I've been listening to, because I also listened to the one of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, a lot of things I didn't realize I had forgotten about those two. Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball founded Desi Lou Studios, and he was the boss, period. And Lucy knew how to get her way. She knew how to run things. She was a very good natural leader. Desi was a barker, was a person who told people what to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And yet it became, they ended up buying RKO Studios. It became the biggest studio in Hollywood at the time, was owned by Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. It's where The Andy Griffith Show was filmed. It was where Gomer Pyle, USMC was filmed. Several big shows as well. And two that I found really interesting, and this is another commonality that I noticed with Ron Howard, that I noticed with Will Smith, and I also noticed with Lucille Ball, and that is a willingness to take advice from people you consider important and at the same time break the rules when you feel like you know a better way to do it. Follow your own heart, follow your own gut. Because after their divorce, Lucille Ball was working at the studio shooting a television show at Desilu, and Desi was running the studio, and Desi was an alcoholic and was just really steeped in his alcoholism. I mean, so much so that he would not show up to meetings or show up drunk, or he wouldn't remember things, or he would yell at people. It was just really, really sad from what the book says. And so finally she was able to exercise an option whereby she became the studio head. And all of a sudden, Lucy was no longer just an actress. She was now running a major Hollywood studio. And what one of the things that was her job was to evaluate projects that they felt that they could do there on the at the studio and to make money, because they wanted not only to lease their studio out to production companies, they wanted the money was in producing your own hit TV shows. And there was two TV shows that were brought to Lucy that everyone else was telling her don't do. They had actually tried one of the shows and it bombed. And the other one was going to be very, very expensive because there was going to be a lot of special effects for the day. And by that, it had a lot of set changes and things like that. And the first show was something called Bridger's Law or something like that. Anyway, Lucy decided she liked it. And they recast the lead to an actor named Peter Graves. And of course, that became Mission Impossible. The second one was Star Trek. Lucy thought that Star Trek was a good idea. So if you think about and how enduring both Mission Impossible have been and Star Trek in their various incarnations in movies and television, etc., we owe that to Lucille Ball. She was the executive that greenlighted both of those shows when other people were telling her it was not the right thing to do. Just like rap was not, and hip hop was not an established thing when Will Smith decided. In fact, there were no albums or records or cassettes even back then. People would just record things while hip hop artists were performing live, and then they would sell these tapes. And his mother worked at a university. His mother did not allow them to use the word ain't in the house, because education to her was everything. And then he decided he wasn't going to go to college. He was going to pursue hip hop. And it was a huge thing for his mother, a huge thing. And yet he had to make his own choice. He had to make his own decision. And of course, it was that that ultimately led to all of his success. We need to have people around us who can give us good advice, who can make suggestions. And at the end of the day, we need to make the decisions ourselves. We need to figure out what is best for us. Really amazing, the commonalities between these successful people. And the other thing I'll just throw out too is that back when I was a kid, there was Look magazine and Life magazine, and it would always show celebrities in these idyllic ways. In fact, Edward G. Mayer, the head of MGM. Anyway, he would make sure that starlets could borrow as much expensive clothes from the costume department as possible, even though they weren't paid enough to afford these clothes, just so they would look glamorous. We still have this idea that people who are successful or who have made a major impact have somehow skirted past life's challenges and difficulties and pains and everything. It's just not true. It's just not true. As we've said many times, Gertrude Stein was right. When you get there, no, there. The thing is, if it's important to you, it's certainly worth the climb. It's certainly worth making the effort. It's certainly worth trying to be the most of yourself that you can be. And that's what's important. So today, give that a shot. Think about that. Think about the importance of hard work, but a little bit more, not overwork. Think about the idea of focus, where it is you want to go. And also making your own decisions, because it's ultimately you who's going to get you there. And if you make the wrong ones, you can typically turn around and make new decisions.
No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more.